Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, health and fitness instructor and coach, Michael Galate.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, the brothers Corin. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Every episode here on the Life Changes Show, we have been featuring interview guests and performance guests for many, many years, and each episode the interview guests and the performance guests are experts in their field. They know their story. Well, interestingly enough, today it just so happens that the interview guest is not only an expert in his field for himself, but he is for others in that he helps others have their best life, teaching them what he knows. And our performance guests not only are the best in their field, but they are teaching others the best of what they know and helping them by helping others bring out their best through music. So because of that coincidence or coincidence, that supported in me the following thought. You know, in a way, health and fitness is a staple in our life, or rather should be something like a staple in our life that we think about, that we focus on, and that we are do our best to keep up in our lives. Same, interestingly enough, for using our voice and singing throughout history. Music has been a staple, and not just soloists performing, but people in groups or storytelling or singing for themselves or humming as they work or singing as they work. It is part of health, conscious health and body health, and we're learning more about that day in and day out. Well, it's an interesting phenomenon, especially now in the world today, that we have kind of put those two things on pedestals and left it for the rock stars, like that the rock stars of quote health and fitness. So those would be the bodybuilders or the sexy bodies out on the beach or the people posting about it or our celebrities who are in magazines or on TVs and on film. We leave that, in a sense, to them. And in a sense, we say, well, if we can't achieve that, then might as well not try. And we kind of do that with singing, too, in the sense that we've got the rock stars of singing. Actually, our performance guests are exactly that. And a lot of people could say, well, if I can't be like the Korn brothers, or if I can't be like this singer or that singer, if I'm not going to make a profession out of it, why try? Potentially, it's not about trying. It's about these things are part of our lives, and potentially we don't just isolate them and say, oh, that's for that person because they have a propensity to do that, or they're genetically that way. I'm not that, so I'll just sit on my couch and not work out or not bring fitness into my life, and I'll watch a performer on stage, but you don't want to hear me sing. Oh my gosh, how many times do you hear that? You don't want to hear me sing. Yes, I do. Like, I want to hear you sing for you. It's good for you to sing or hum. It's like, do it. Anyway, just saying, but I can't wait to hear what our interview guest and what our performance guests have to say about all of this. But before we do that, I have to throw in kind of this ridiculous example, in the sense that if we did this with eating, again, ridiculous example, but if we saw really good eaters on TV or in movies or on Instagram, it's like, oh, he's a really good eater. She's a really good eater. They make it look fashionable or they make it look sexy. It's like, oh, well, I can never eat like that. So I just won't eat.
I don't know. There's been an awful lot of modeling going on from what we see in TV and film.
About people eating?
Eating or smoking or other things over the years.
True.
So, we didn't discuss the monologue before the show, and I'm really glad that you framed things the way you did, because I was thinking about how excited I am to have Michael on. We're in a world where everybody's selling something. Mm. And it's all biohacking this and 4 steps to that and 12 steps to this. And I've had the good fortune of seeing Michael in action and also benefiting from his sharp and sometimes snarky inspiration and keeping you in line. But the authenticity and the bringing it back to the basics and the follow through and the consistency, there's a lot to be said for just getting real again.
Nice. Well, I got a sense of that speaking with him, and it wasn't about, yeah, you got to come into the gym and you got to, I'll make you look good. It was about, well, what would be your goal? What are you trying to achieve? What is it that you're trying to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can't wait for tonight's conversation.
Well, physical fitness starts in your mind. This is episode 837 of the Life Changes Show. And like Mark said, we do have interview guest Michael Galate on the show. And we also have performance guests, the Corin Brothers. Can't wait. Our interview guest is a certified personal trainer and fitness coach. He is Michael Galate. Welcome, Michael, to the Life Changes Show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's a pleasure to have you. You know, you are perfect for this conversation because, in a sense, you are like a fish that grew up in water, and you didn't even know there was such a thing as fitness, because to you life was fitness, right? Tell us about that growing up.
Pretty much,
right?
I was without any influence or decision myself. I was born into it. My mom had started a fitness, or you know, a gym, but a fitness business, and that's what she'd been in her whole life. But being born into it, growing up around it, being around the gym, being in the environment at home with all of that kind of knowledge and influence kind of has just guided me in my path, I think, of where I've inevitably ended up. So it's fortunately I've kind of was just pushed in the right direction my whole life.
Well, Malibu Fitness is in Malibu, right there on the beach. So you also grew up around the beach and sun and sand and all of that. So there was all that part of it too, right?
Yeah, it was a kind of an effortless environment to be around, to be encouraged to be active and, you know, go outside and entertain yourself.
And I wonder if you actually really needed encouragement, because it was all there for you and it was all part of life, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's always the temptations and the other sides to things, but for the most part, it was right outside my back door. And, you know, that's what me and my friends did growing up. That's what we always had. So it's kind of all we knew.
So it's interesting, when I asked you about your first experience about fitness or training or something like that, you said that you remembered just running around and playing on top of the machines in your mom's gym. And I love that, because what if going to the gym, or what if quote unquote fitness, was playing?
Completely.
How would that be different for us?
Yeah, I think we'd all be doing it a lot more.
So
go ahead.
In a sense, what do you wish that other children could have in this moment, like that you could help impart for parents about physical fitness for them?
I think it's just kind of surrounding your kid in that type of lifestyle, whether or not they in the moment want to do it. but I think a little bit of a push is good. I think just exposing kids to it and having positive experiences from it, so that if they go back to it or when they go back to it or do something similar, you know, there's a nostalgia to it. There's a positive kind of reminder there. Like when I'm at the gym, of course, luckily I've grown up with a mom that had a gym to, you know, be in, but when I'm in the gym, it feels kind of like I'm home. So there's always that, like, that side of it. So there's always a nice little reminder there.
So for those of us who didn't grow up that way and who didn't have the experience of gym being fun or fitness being fun, what could we do now to potentially start bringing in some fun and potentially starting to change our mindset about, oh, I have to look like something else in order to even start down the fitness path?
Yeah, I think whenever someone thinks about going to the gym, they think about, you know, the 0.1% that you see in ads. So I think really it's just going back to the basics, like you guys said, keeping it simple, staying open-minded, and try to keep everything like really positive. You don't need to force things, push it to like you're in pain or agony. Things that you like to do. If it's a sport, then you can kind of incorporate things that apply to your sport or that activity. If you like to hike, you can apply things that are going to make you better at that. So you know that you're, you know, at least doing something into another activity, or that it's functional or practical. You can apply it elsewhere instead of just feeling like a repetitive motion that you have to do in a gym, like on a hamster wheel. So kind of replicating what you do outside of the gym in the gym, that's another way to kind of trick yourself in a sense.
There's a theme, and it was coming up when we were talking earlier, and that is practicality. You used also the word balance at the time. So what I was getting a sense of is that there is in our experience of our best life possible, there are things that we need that potentially fitness, or not potentially, for sure, fitness or fitness training could support us in those areas. And so you focus on balance and our brain and all that. Tell us about what I'm actually not sure what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I like it. No, totally. It's fitness overall. It's like, fitness isn't just how much weight you can lift or how your abs look. It's kind of your whole overall well-being, where it's physical, mental, your sleep comes into play, your spirit or emotions. You know, it's not just one thing. It's kind of like a full spectrum of balance. And I always come back to balance, whether it's actually balancing literally or, but just kind of balancing the lifestyle, whether you need to go harder in one area or take a break in one area. But yeah, it's not just one thing. It's not just the weight room. It's not just the cardio. It's, you know, it's your nutrition. It's your mental health. It's so many factors that come into play.
I talk about balance, and I love how you being on the show and the Brothers Korn being on the show today help bring this to my awareness. I want to do more fitness. However, I also am a singer. I love singing, and I'm called to sing every once in a while, and I'm not as prepared as I'd like to be. I'd also like to do more singing. And the interesting thing is, I don't do the fitness, I don't do the singing, and there are a lot of other things I don't do. And bringing these two together today make me think, well, there are a lot of things I don't do. Maybe I kind of like, you know, how you all teach to do like legs one day and upper body one day or something like that. Maybe I could have a balance of I do fitness one day, another day I do singing, another day I do something else. What do you think about that kind of balance?
That's exactly the balance that I'm talking about. So fitness is part of it. The music is going to nourish your soul and make you happy and feel good. And then when you're happy and you feel good, you're going to be more inclined to go move and work out. And, you know, it kind of all is integrated to it and plays into itself. I think it's all connected. You know, it's really when someone comes to you to work out and train, it's about them. It's about, you know, where they're going, where they want to be. So there is, you know, you can train overall general for everyone to do general strength or, like you said, legs and upper body and cardio. But, you know, everyone's different on so many levels. And I think when they come to the gym and come to train, it's, you know, there's a level of vulnerability. So you have to work with them a little bit too and keep them within their comfort zone. At the same time, you push that comfort zone. But there's a you know, a give and a pull to that.
I suppose you also see a propensity to, like, this part of your body you don't need a lot of training on, maybe, but if you do this, it'll support this, or I get that as well.
Yeah.
Speaking of looking at somebody's body or looking at how they move, or something you brought to my attention, how they react to certain things tells you what they feel about themselves, right? So we talked about lifting something above our heads. Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I think a lot of, you know, body language can tell you so many different things all in once. So that's just really what I cue into, and I look for certain things. And, you know, there are certain signs that are pretty general for everyone. You know, when the eyes bulge, or like, if, you know, if someone starts to get distracted, you know, there's certain signs for different things, like, of, you know, how nervous or uncomfortable, or, you know, you know, maybe at a level of like uncertainty, if they feel in danger or unsafe in a certain position. So yeah, I think I just try to, you know, be aware and, you know, take into account kind of a couple things at once, and just do my part and check in with them just to communicate. And I'll always verbalize things too if I'm unsure.
So what I'm also getting at is that we aren't aware sometimes how we feel about our bodies affects our confidence or affects what other people see. So the lifting something above our heads might lift our shirt, right?
Yeah.
And so what happens, what do you notice?
Yeah, with that, yeah, example? Exactly. So like, if someone, you know, is doing a movement and their shirt comes up to show their midriff or their stomach, and they may not feel so confident about how they look, they might have some issues about their own body, or, you know, be embarrassed about certain things. So, and if there's a reaction to that and then they pull back and they hide, you know, there's signs like that that show that people are, you know, they're still uncomfortable, even though they're working on what they want to do. But so I just, you know, I work with them. If there's something else that we can do to train something similar without putting them in that position where their shirt comes up, and, you know, avoid that. This, that creates us a safe space. They know that they can trust me, and that they're not going to be surprised with maybe a movement that they feel like exposed or, you know, uncomfortable.
And do you bring that to their awareness that you seem to be uncomfortable with this? Is this an area you want to work on, kind of thing?
It depends. If, you know, if it's more of like something per se, like we just talked about, like a body image thing, that's something is, you know, that's a touchy subject. If people want to talk about it, they're going to bring it up. I don't really pull for, you know, things unless they're going to feel comfortable bringing it up in the first place, then I'll ask questions. But, I'll just take note of that thing and, or those types of little signs, and, you know, just remember that for the next time, or work around it for the next set, depending on who it is. If it's someone who I know is like, tell me everything you notice, then I'm going to give it to them, and I don't need to maybe filter or be as cautious.
So it was interesting. It helped me focus in it. I, as a life coach, I tuned into the fact that, oh, when I ask somebody, do you want to talk about this or tell me about this? And they say, oh, I don't want to talk about that. It's like, okay, we learn, we get a sense there's something going on there, right? So I didn't think about that in the sense of how we feel about our bodies. So how would you like people to come into the gym or come into fitness, or whether it's working with you or just on their own, how do you think they should feel at their body? Do you think, are you the kind of person that thinks you should be upset with your body and say, whip it into shape, or just love your body? And, you know, how do you approach that?
That's it depends on the person. I think it depends on like kind of what motivates you and how, do you kind of work well and thrive with, you know, the constructive criticism stuff, or do you work well with positivity and don't push it too far? I want to stay in my comfort zone. You know, it's so many levels of it. But for the most part, I want like anyone from a beginner level to an expert who wants to be the best. It's just got to be positive, I think, with keeping goals, like not as a big long-term thing. Like I need to lose 75 pounds. I need to get, 20 inch biceps. It's more of like progress reports and little steps, you know, keeping it to the basics and, you know, keeping it simple is what I always go back to. So just going in with, you know, consistency goals, like you said, you want to do more workout, you want to do more music. And so since you get 0 a week, try to get 30 minutes each week. If that's doable, stay with that. And that feels good. If you're like, wow, this is fun, I want to do more, or I know I have more time, I could fit it in, you can up it. And then you just try to stay consistent with that and you build onto that. So the fitness thing, the best time to start is today if you don't do it, because it's a lifestyle thing, it's a commitment. And once you get into it, hopefully you can get engaged and see results or see changes that make you kind of want more and want to progress. But, you know, it's a lifestyle thing. So it's there for the rest of your life. You're going to have to do the movement. You're going to have to do the work. You're going to have to get in shape or work towards getting in shape or improving health. So it's a building block and you just chip away at it.
I liked how, when we were talking, you brought in something that I don't think I've ever considered or see anybody do, but a couple of things you said, people need motivation sometime. And in order to get motivated, whether that's talking to a friend or a relative or a family member who might motivate them to help them get into the headspace, or using affirmations. You even said prayer. Like I don't know if I've ever thought of anybody actually sitting down to pray, God, help me exercise today, but I like it.
It could be anything. It could be, bless me with some good health, or let me change my mind about this.
I like it.
There's always that ongoing battle internally.
You have some thoughts as to also why you think it is that it is a battle for us. I, of course, mentioned some in the beginning. It's like, well, if I can't look like that, why bother? But like you said, there were a lot of temptations for you growing up, and you had it all there for you. A lot more temptations today, right?
Definitely. I think just with the way that society and the culture of our society has shifted, and naturally with technology and conveniences and time-saving either apps or things that we do now or routines. And I think it's just easy to get so busy and spread thin and try to, commit to everything and be social and be successful at work, that it's easy to kind of lose sight of yourself. It's easy to sacrifice personal things first. And the gym is one of those things that it's people can even feel guilty going and spending so much time at the gym when they have so little free time, maybe to spend with their significant other or their kids or family or friends even. So it's easy to, I think, lose sight of that. But, life is full of everything. You just got to step back sometimes, take a deep breath, and kind of reassess things.
Awesome. We back to how potentially there may be a time soon with so much happening as far as more people becoming aware of what's going in our bodies, food, water, air, and how we are using our bodies. And there's so much equipment out there and all of that. It's a whole mindset. It'd be great if the kids could could get started earlier.
So true.
How can we talked about this earlier a little bit too, but how can we keep this in the forefront in a positive way without the, hey, you know, I got a great body, look at me, you know, be like me, have a great body, but make it more, let's be aware of our body and what it needs in completely. This direction. How do we do that?
I think the very first thing is really like education. I think it could be a much bigger piece of school even for kids. Just, you know, some kids are never going to learn things that their parents, you know, don't care about or aren't into or aren't aware of. So, you know, I think just the education of it, just the knowledge of some, it can be so basic and it can be fun. It can be at a game. So it kind of, you know, it turns into activities and interactive things where kids are engaged and they're more, you know, they're going to retain more and remember more because it's an experience and maybe a positive, hopefully a positive experience. But I think with education and integrating that into like school at an earlier age is a huge one. And just maybe overall community and if maybe it could be come down to like city councils incorporating things or just maybe society, we start having another shift back to less virtual things and more physical, real, you know, activities and back to the outside, the outdoor activities.
Now I talk about the children and listening to you. It's not just the children. It's also the children inside of us, right? So getting that child within us to be able to come out and play in that way, in a healthy way, right? 100%. And I like how you talked about, when we talked about that, how trauma and sometimes trauma can support us if we're able to process it and all that as adults, or et cetera, and it can propel us, and sometimes it holds us back. But being able to heal the trauma around fitness for some people is important too. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's so many people have had negative experiences, probably most people, whether it's been a quick, you know, verbal jab at school, or if it's been your parents your whole life or just growing up. So I think, yeah, just kind of rewiring that into just like an open space that's positive, that people can, you know, come and relate to each other and, you know, support each other really. And, just be encouraged to shift all of that over into more of like a healing and, you know, a feel good thing where the gym is therapy. And there's studies that show, you know, the endorphins, the dopamine, the, you know, the runner's high you get, all those different types of things, the hormone balance that you get with exercising your muscles. So, there's just so much feel good. And I think just even if you have like a gym buddy or someone that you know from going to like the gym or the track or wherever you go do your activities, there's a little accountability. There's a little, you know, community there. So you kind of create your own positive environment.
Well, speaking about positive environment, I think this is a good time to say that your mom is owner of Malibu Fitness, where you are also a trainer and the manager. We've had the pleasure of having her on the show. That's Lonnie right. Weinstock Latte. And so go listen to that interview. But so much of what you're also saying about community is exemplified there. And I have to plug that because it was important when we talked about it with her on the show. And I think it's more important today. Malibu Fitness right now is in Malibu. Malibu, a community that has suffered two major fires within, what is it, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it is, but major. And the community has needed support. And I remember, I think we interviewed your mom during COVID, where part of the Malibu Fitness was people coming in and having, you know, feeling like they're home, like you said, feeling like they have a family. So being able to find something like that or people they could work with beyond the machines, right, is a big deal. Or the workshop. Tell us, where does that come from for you all, or how do you embody that yourself for your clients?
I think it just comes from the time that she's put in and the nature of the community. It's a small town, you know, a lot of people that you knew that were there 10 or 20 years ago, you know, their kids, your kids grew up with their kids. So it kind of just intertwines and overlaps a lot. So, you know, that you either know someone or, you know, their family or their good friend or this and that that's connected. So it's, you know, it's a big, big interconnected kind of feel there. But I think part of that and just kind of being there through the years and being open to any and all, you know, grandmas, parents, kids, grandkids, you know, four generations can come into the gym in the same day or the same week. So it's pretty cool to see that. And, you know, you feel it, even if you're new to the community and you come in, people have commented how that, you know, they can see it, they can sense it. There's a vibe. So I think just kind of naturally and authentically from the people being there, and kind of that, you know, tight little community that has each other's backs, it opens the doors for more people to meet each other that kind of sink into the community, and, you know, it builds on top of itself.
Well, yet another great point, whether people are lucky enough to find it at Malibu Fitness or they can look for it within their own families or communities, wherever they are in the world, that's important. But they can look to MalibuFitness.com. I remember during the pandemic, you all were doing videos for people out there in the world to get healthier from home. And so there's stuff out there they could check out. And for those who are in town and want to work with Michael, are you still taking clients?
I am. Give us a call or you can come in.
So go to MalibuFitness.com. Michael, thank you for being on and sharing your heart, your passion, and your view on fitness and helping us with our physical fitness mind.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the invitation and having me.
It's a pleasure, and look forward to connecting and maybe getting to experience you firsthand at some point in your area of expertise. Physically.
Yeah, most definitely.
All right, Michael, all the best to you. So,
well, now that you know you can do it online, you don't even have to.
Yeah, no excuses now.
No excuses now. So thank you, Mark. This is a conversation that we've had on all aspects, the singing, actually, and talking about getting community involved in the singing. And with Michael, I thought, how community outdoor exercising, and
it translates to such a healthy environment for the community out there. And I wanted to bring it to other neighborhoods because it translates so deeply into what we need today. More community, more connection, more focus on health. You know, after a few years of stand 6 feet apart and don't talk to anybody and such, to go the other direction and rely on each other and connect and be inspired. You know, like I said, I think it comes down to getting real again.
Getting real, getting together in groups and sharing these experiences.
Imagine that. It's like kind of like a human experience.
and here we are, and life changes. Well, with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Jack, and I am looking back at a really incredible relationship that I had years ago. It felt as if we were meant to be together forever. However, we broke up, and I felt like I would never love anyone again like I loved her. So my questions are, is it true that each of us have a divine complement? And does that mean I will never have true love this lifetime? Or is it possible that if we reconnect, could it last forever now?
Dear Jack, that's a really beautiful and deep question. It's clear that this relationship touched something really deep in you, and it's completely natural to wonder about the deeper meaning behind it all. The idea of a divine complement is often tied to spiritual or metaphysical beliefs, particularly within teachings like twin flames, soulmates, or certain esoteric and mystical traditions. Many spiritual traditions and soul-based philosophies speak of a concept like this. Sometimes it's called a twin flame or divine complement. It's the idea that there's someone whose soul resonates with yours so deeply that it feels like home. When you met her, it probably felt like that, like something ancient, familiar, even destined, and maybe it was. But here's the important part. Even if someone is your divine complement, it doesn't always mean the timing, growth, or earthly circumstances align for a lifelong partnership in that very moment. Sometimes these relationships are meant to awaken you, to stir your soul, to show you who you are, and that's powerful, even if it's not permanent. Real, soul-deep love can come more than once. In fact, sometimes love that comes after heartbreak or spiritual awakening has even more depth, clarity, and staying power because you've grown through the fire of losing something sacred. And about reconnecting with her, that's also possible. Life is full of surprises. If both of you have evolved, healed, and are aligned now in a way you weren't before, it could absolutely be something beautiful again. Relationships have come back around in the most unexpected and magical ways when both people are ready. If you're open to it, you could try reaching out, not with expectations, but just with authenticity. A simple message, maybe something like, "Hey, I've been thinking about you lately. Hope you're well. Just wanted to say you've always had a special place in my heart." It gives space for a response without pressure, and it honors the truth of what you're feeling. But even if that connection never re-enters your life in the same form, know this, you are still capable of experiencing true, lasting love. You're not limited to just one sacred love. The universe is abundant like that, full of love.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
I'm excited about our performance segment. We have two very special guests. They are the Brothers Korn. They are formally booked as the Kin. The Brothers Korn comprised two Australian-born musicians and transformational leaders, Torold and Isaac Korn. Torold and Isaac, welcome to the show. Finally.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Filippo.
It's great to be here with you all.
What a pleasure. If we had to thank the long list of people that have said over the years, you need to have the Brothers Korn on the show, which we had already known each other. We'd already been introduced, but there are a couple of people that kept repeating it, Tess Cacciatore and Bruce Cryer. So a big thank you to both of them. And then most recently, the Illuminate Film Festival, which is coming up in Santa Barbara, because you all have a film in that called The Journey. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. But we had been holding out for that experience that we were actually just talking about, where people can gather and experience the two of you live, because your music is amazing. And live, it's a whole other thing. Tell us what's happening that you think the audience is feeling when you are live in person.
Well, thank you. We've been asking ourselves that, I think, for 30 years since we started singing together. In fact, I could hearken all the way back in our careers. We were doing everything we possibly could to become the next biggest band in the world, which was our small vision, that we would often go into the recording studio and try to capture what ultimately we were experiencing in a small room or a theater or a larger room when we got to tour the world with Pink and Coldplay. But we were always trying to, I guess, stuff the magic of a live moment in a bottle. And maybe it is the total sum of not just the sound, the feeling of being immersed. I don't know, the energy of it all. For some reason, we've just always been an in-the-moment experience more than anything. And we've certainly did everything we've been able to do in the last 10 years to really master the art of recording too. So I think we're still looking into why live is so such a potent thing as an artist.
When I got to experience you live most recently in Hollywood, actually, so there's your brothers and you, it's obvious that you love each other. It's obvious that you love your family. And you mentioned your mom. As a matter of fact, your mom, did she write lyrics for one of the songs, or right?
Yeah, she's actually written a lot of our lyrics in collaboration with us. And she's a fantastic writer, an oracle, really. And the song that's coming out this week, No Tomorrow, on our upcoming live album, she wrote most of the lyrics, if not all of them. We just gave her a basic direction and some gibberish to follow. And she plucked it down, and we're excited to share that, the recording of that, I believe.
Nice, yeah.
She's written a lot of lyrics.
Well, so back to the brothers. How long have you been brothers?
No. Yeah. Almost 44 years. Almost 44 years next month.
You started. Like one of you started, and then the other one kind of followed. How did it work? How did music happen all of a sudden for the two of you together?
It happened very separately for us. Tarald was quite musical at a young age. I think 10 or 11, he got a guitar, and I was very much pursuing something else. I mean, I was going to be a lawyer, of all things. Nothing against law, but I was dead set on it. And then I heard a voice when I was 15. Said, you will sing? And I thought, how silly, what are you talking about? And it was just a voice in my head. And then 6 months later, my best friend Yaniv at the time, he was like, sing for me, Zach, at a backyard party. And I just kind of started wailing the blues right then and there, found my voice, and was still in disbelief. He said, I didn't know you could sing. I said, oh, I can't sing. He was like, yeah, you can, and you will sing for our band. If you know, he dared me to sing, be the lead singer of his band. So that's where it all kind of started for me, and I found jazz on my own, and then came over to America, at which point Tarald was already in New York with our mom and finishing high school, and I was finishing college, and we just started writing songs then and there in New York City.
And it was the harmony, I think, that really, when we harmonized together for the first times, we were like, oh, okay, there's something happening between us. And it was incredibly satisfying. And there was also that sense of like, well, we can't not do this together. We've found music in separate ways, and here it is. And so we had, like we just said before, you know, a very small aim, which was to become the next biggest band in the world. We were pretty obsessed with this idea of just leaning in with full conviction, gumption, naivete thrown in. We knew no one in New York, although, you know, we were privileged to be able to be there in the early 2000s. And over the course of about 15 years, we went from little dive bars to living out a lot of our dream. We ended up signed on Interscope Gold Records in New Zealand and toured well over a million people in about 4 or 5 years. And all the things in between, such a long story, you know, there's so many stories built into those 15 years. But it wasn't until a certain moment that we had this gut feeling to write and foster and nurture other voices to the forefront. And we just, you know, thought it was in the entertainment world. So we came out to LA, and
particularly we wanted to hold, you know, safe and curious space for young female artists, which we saw were, you know, not given that generally by the music business, by producers. A lot of the time there was just not a very safe, more of a projected space. And so we thought, oh, imagine that, imagine giving opportunity to a young up and coming artist and helping them write a song that really connected them to their purpose and their heart, and also was a great pop song. So we thought, let's move our young families out to Los Angeles from New York. And we got pretty far in the songwriting world, you know, the small LA songwriting world. Within 6 months, you know, we were doing sessions for, you know, insert famous person here, and we quickly realized that both of us at the same time were not feeling very connected to the culture around songwriting, pop songwriting at the time. And so we thought, imagine, you know, if it's not this, then what is it? You know, we've moved our families out. So we kind of lost sleep that night. And the next day we came to this idea, this download, as if it was a song coming through us. And it was like, imagine if we could, you know, get to know someone like we were their brothers, and, you know, get to really understand the music they loved and the unique nature of their voice before then also writing song with them. And so we thought, gosh, imagine that. And 2 weeks later, someone requested us pretty randomly on Facebook, a fan of ours we knew. And 3 months later, 4 months later, she came out and recorded an EP with us, and it went on to win awards and all of this, and which is not as important as how amazing the experience was for us. And we thought, gosh, we'd actually do that again. And suddenly our friends and different people we knew were requesting
asking us
and,
to brother
and it
them
just kind of snowballed from there.
So this is us 10 years them. Later yeah. This is us 10 years later. We've journeyed privately with a few hundred people to 1500 songs or so, and you know, it's opened up a whole new decade of a purpose to hear the world's song one voice at a time. And it's opened us into self-development and the transformational world, and humans from all walks of life all over the world ready at all different ages to reclaim their voice through song.
And we set up our foundation, the Yobig Voice Foundation, to bring opportunity to underserved voices. And yeah, we're excited to share about our TV show too, which is where we get to do exactly what we do in the songwriter's journey with people we don't know on a camera. So it's been pretty fun to explore that.
And, well, before we go more into that, and no offense to anybody who wants to be the biggest band in the world or the biggest singer in the world, but twice you've said our small dream. And I know it's real and a bit tongue in cheek. Why is that so small now compared to what?
Oh, well, we're being very, I'm being very Australian, dry and sarcastic.
Well, I know.
Taking the piss.
Yeah.
No, but you're also, but you also said, you know, the awards were not as important as, so there's,
no, fair enough.
So what is the as again?
Nice.
It's a great point. Yeah, I think that the journey that we've discovered, the magic that we, that is in music that you were alluding to before, is more important than the accolades, you know. So to witness someone waking up to their magic is really, you know, it's a golden experience, you know, one that is surpasses any accolade ultimately.
I would also add that, you know, when you're chasing this notion of success, maybe you attain it, maybe you don't, maybe you get a bunch, maybe you get close. I think one thing that we've really discovered is life is a measurement more of how satisfying your days are. And I think satisfaction is the probably the most important experience, rather than chasing something that you don't have yet that we've discovered. So satisfaction. Also, I think the great currency, you know, beyond of course enough money to survive is being proud of yourself. We've discovered that too. And we get to help people through the songwriter's journey find that proudness inside themselves. And we certainly help them reorient back to themselves to have an experience looking inward, you know, already finding themselves fascinating, and through being generous and falling back in love with themselves, you know, really recognizing that what they have within them is worth making music about, and a voice that's worth voicing while they're here for this finite period of time.
What is Long Way Home about?
It feels like it took us 30 years to write this song. And so it really is the journey that he and I have walked to this moment, and includes, I guess, probably most of our, or, you know, a good selection of our deepest struggles together, pretty much the ones that we've kind of walked through together. And it's about, acknowledging that even at our greatest moments we're still, you know, half our hearts are hesitating and the other half our heart is jumping. You know, we're never fully baked. We're never really figured out. You know, we're a work in progress. And then, you know, the kind of the bridge point of the song goes to a different theme, which is that in all its messiness and heartache, life, you know, we were made for this moment. We were made to say yes to it, to whatever emerges. And that's what the song reminds us to do.
You know,
From
the looks of it, from somebody entering today and listening to and watching the Korn Brothers, it looks like you both came down from heaven, like, we're going to do this together, and you both knew, and we're going to sound great together, and we're going to look great, and life is going to be great. It looks like it was already set, and you've just walked through it. And it couldn't be further from the truth. You have not even shared, and we don't have time for today, and we want to give it service, justice, when we talk about it on the show with you. Some of the things that you all have been through that we've gotten to know about in the community, and one of the reasons why you couldn't be on the show one time because of what was happening in your lives. And I think it's really important. Like, I can't wait to hear Long Way Home, because I think it's going to bring that point home too.
Thank you.
No, thank you. And we're going to get to have the opportunity to hear you all live. So this song has been released. It has just been released, actually. It's on the new album. The new album is called?
Well, the new album is called Long Way Home. This is the title track.
Title track. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, here are the Korn Brothers live on the Life Changes Show with their new song, Long Way Home.
Thank you. I never thought I would make it on my own. I took the long way, took the long way home. I never thought I could fill this hole. It hurts to say I took the long way home. And I fear I've strayed and took the long way home. But I'm home. Half my heart is scared to break, while the other part just celebrates. I'm here now. I'm here now. I felt so little as I grow old. It hurts to say I took the long way home. I tried so hard to be well known. It hurts to say I took the long way home. And I feel I've changed and took the long way home. And I'm home. Is scared to break, while the other part just celebrates. I'm here now. I'm here now. Half my heart hesitates, while the other part just says, don't wait, I'm here now.
I'm here now. Ooh, 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 yeah.
We were made for this moment. We were made for this lifetime. We are instruments of change. We are living for this hour. Say yes. Say yes, say yes. We were made for this moment. We were made for this lifetime. We are instruments of change. We are living for this hour. Say yes, say yes, say yes. Took the long way home. I never thought I could lose you twice. It hurts to say you took the long way home. And I see your face on the long way home. It's worth the wait, the long way home.
The Brothers Gorin. Just got emotional there. I just remembered what that song is about. Guys, thank you. More special to know, you've been in the studio all day, and you came and performed that live for us. Brothers Gorin, brothers.com. Brothers Gorin, of course, you could find them all over the internet. They also were previously booked as The Kin, and now I believe they're also going to be booked as The Brothers Gorin and The Kin, right?
Yeah, we've reclaimed The Kin in our name, Brothers Gorin and The Kin, for this album, and we wanted to get back some of that energy that was in it. We feel like it's in there when we hear the recording. It feels like it's got something, the Kin energy in there. The Kin was completely dedicated to, fighting for love. Love will conquer fear, and there was this unabashed hope in that, in our, the essence of the Kin. And we thought it was time to bring that back.
You made me recall a couple moments in the show that I last saw you all perform live, and that song got me that you just shared with us. So want to remind everybody, the name of that song is Long Way Home. And the other song that really got me was One Voice. Now, we're not going to get to hear it on the show, but we did post the official music video on the Life Changes Show page for the Brothers Gorin, again, K-O-R-E-N. You can go and see it there, but it's also all over. And it's on their album. Real quickly, tell us what One Voice is about.
Yeah, One Voice is really the closest we've come to putting in a song what we've learned about the voice and what our new small mission is to hear the world song. To hear the world song one voice at a time, right? And what we realize is that every voice is unique, and yet there's also this collective voice that we are committed to tuning our ears and our listening towards. So, that one voice is our mission. It harkens to our mission, which is to really hear that collective voice, to feel it, whether it's over a lifetime of listening to individuals and groups, or one day we get to conduct some experiment where we get to hear it. But that is our commitment, that there's this greater than ourselves effect that you were talking about earlier in the show, where when we sing together, it raises our vitality, it raises our connection, it shows us if real time that there's something greater than the sum of our parts. And I think that's why Tarot and I started and continue to sing together, is because there's something greater than the sum for us, and hopefully for others, if it's their cup of tea, in the harmonies and in the addition of our togetherness.
Well, we're going to get to hear one more song with more harmonies and good music and lyrics that make you think. But it brings us to everything you're talking about, the journey, the TV show, and the long-form documentary. I love it. What you say is it's the first makeover show in the world that uses music instead of makeup. Brilliant. And I also have to share on one of the pages on somebody's website where they were talking about the show, The Journey, and you all, somebody wrote, it was a Jackie somebody wrote, finally, a reality show that has some depth. And then it says, I do not watch a lot of TV, but I'll watch this. And then she ends with P.S., Sia rocks. So why did you mention Sia?
Oh, Sia's the executive producer of the TV show, which is indeed amazing. She's a big advocate of mental health, and this is really about how music can be, a mental and emotional health support for any human being, to realize that there's also harmony that we get to choose and lean into, as well as the chaos and the confusion. We get to experience symmetry and beauty through our pain, and even when we're in pain, tears and even anger can sound beautiful through music.
You've all been doing this 4 years, and with many, many people we talk, as you shared, in a nutshell, what will we experience when we either see the show or see the documentary?
Well, hopefully you recognize and remember, that each voice has a unique sound to make, and music and song is an ancient medium that we've been using for generations. And I think there's a remembering that we need, this world needs. It ended up being for the few. It ended up being for those on a big stage and everyone buying tickets. And that's a beautiful archetype, that it's by far the less important archetype of music, song, and voice. The really important one is that we each have a song to sing if it calls us, and we each have a voice to give voice to our feelings and other things. And so it's a remembrance. That's what we hope people get to see, that it's in every one of us.
There's a little bit of drama too.
Yes, always. Always. Well, the human condition is, it's a dynamic path for all of us, right? None of us are spared an experience while we're here, in whatever shape and form it appears. And music, song, voice gives a space. Music has always given us a space to deal with, face, and digest the experience of life, right? And so it continues to be that for anyone that dares lean in.
The Brothers Coren do speaking engagement. They have courses and programs, and of course this show and the documentary, The Journey. You can go learn all about them at Brothers Coren, KOREN.com, and the Journey TV show.com. We're going to get to hear this song, No Tomorrow, and this hasn't even come out yet. So thank you for letting us share it tonight on the Life Changes show for the first time. What is it about?
Well, actually, this is one of the songs that our dear mother wrote. We were kind of in the throes of the last week before getting ready for the recording. And we had this song that we loved, but we hadn't done the lyrics. And we said, well, Mom, this is about being uninhibited is what we called it. She was like, oh, really? you know. And so she took it off for a week and came back. She was like, you're going to hate it. And I'm like, why? She's like, well, it's about a song about death. And we're like, oh. Well, tell us more. Tell us more. She's like, well, you said uninhibited, and the greatest uninhibitor is the truth fact that you're going to die someday. And so,
oh,
you know,
oh,
get off yourself and eat yourself and have an experience now. Why wait? And so we were like, okay, we can't really argue with that. But yeah, so we loved the lyrics she came up with, and only she could somehow make a beautiful song about death.
Oh, wow.
But it is, it's an honoring of the beautiful process, that the one thing we know, it's should be comforting to us, that there's something we know for certain, is that we were born, that we will, that we are living in this moment, and that one day we will not be here. And so can we live today like there's no tomorrow? And that's the invitation.
Wow. That, it sounds like a small goal, or how do you say it?
It's another one of our small dreams.
Yeah. Another small dream.
Small dream. Okay, so here, now this is pre-recorded, and exactly like your healer, you'll hear it in the album. If you get it, it will be released later this week. No Tomorrow by the Brothers Korn on the Life Changes Show.
It's a buzz to be alive. What a ride it's been so far. I always lived close to the flame. Drain the cup and cut these chains. And I paint with colors bold. I'm crazy, I've been told. I don't care what others say, I'll find my way. Be in love with life, it don't last. Kiss your fears goodbye and drive past. You have your best.
Corin Brothers here on the Life Changes Show. Go to Corin Brothers, or Brothers Corin, excuse me, Brothers Corin. Got too excited there. K-O-R-E-N. Tarl and Isaac, wow. Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
It was our pleasure.
It was our pleasure to get to hang out with you tonight.
Oh, man, I look forward to more. I look forward to getting to see the documentary and the TV show and, of course, the album coming out as the songs are coming out little by little. Thank you for all that you're doing in this space for those who have ears to hear and hearts to feel.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. So with that, after this big thank you to Tarl Corin and Isaac Corin of the Brothers Corin, and a big thank you to Michael Galate. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, as ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.